Welcome to this very special edition of the KJ Masterclass Live, the show which ensures that you profit from your time spent here with experts, either through their industry insights, information, or simply learning from them. And today we have Jason Stanley. He's an author, and he focuses on healing the root cause of weight gain. Welcome to the show, Jason.
Thank you very much, Ajay.
You are welcome to the show, Jason. You are welcome to India in this online form. And I'm sure not just in India, but a lot of people across the globe will benefit from what we are going to talk right now. We'll be talking about understanding the root cause of weight gain from you. But first, to understand this, Jason, my first question is to understand, firstly, let the audience know more about you. I've talked about it, but then it is just a little bit. You tell your audience, tell the audience, who exactly is Jason Stanley? Why is he so passionate about healing the root cause of weight gain?
Very well. Your audience who are on the visual, they'll see that I've got a lot of gray hair. And that's to let your listening audience know that I'm old. And that is important because I've been working on this thing for 44 years. Yeah, now not directly, not straight all the way through, but I did start 44 years ago with a medical anthropology program where I did research in the field with overweight or obese women and did a life interview where we started off in childhood, what have you. We came up through their entire life. And the initial plan was to look at what causes obesity from diet, social structure, life, what have you. Well, it turned out none of those things that we commonly think of were held true. As I talked to more and more different women, these things would one by one fall apart. But what I did find, what was actually groundbreaking at the time, was that it was patterning during childhood. And the pattern had nothing to do with trauma, which is one of the things we jump at very quickly, but it was having to do that they always, and I've interviewed over 1,000 people since then, and it is still always 100% that the people who have dealt with long-term weight gain and even chronic and severe obesity had this situation where they felt good while eating, and they were socially and with their family, they were accepted. Basically, while I'm eating, I'm a good child. Now, they may have had other stresses going on, but this was the safety place in their life throughout their entire childhood. And that gets patterned into the deep part of the brain. So I did that in 1979, 1980. And back then, we thought that the brain was a brick. Once you went through adolescence, it was solid. And that was when I went to the people in the psychoanalytic area, the psychiatrist, what have you. They said, yeah, forget it. You can't change, back then, what I was calling the subconscious mind. And then in around 2000, we changed our view a little bit, we meaning the science, and we said, hey, maybe it is plastic, we can change things. So I wrote a book on it, 250 pages, it's a real book, and then followed that up with a clinical trial. I'm sad to say that failed. The work just wasn't there yet. About 6 years later, I learned about a technique called EFT. It's a little bit on the woo-woo side. And I thought, well, goodness, because they're trying to deal emotional freedom technique and they deal with old patterning in the brain. And I said, well, hey, this will work. So I rewrote the book, 350 pages. And I was living abroad at the time. So I came back home, bought a house, did all the stuff that you do to set up and ran another clinical trial. It failed. So that was not a very good start there. So I let it go again, went back to my regular life, and which is education. And then I, in 2021, I learned about a process called havening. And I was curious, so I dove into it. And oh my goodness, Ajay, it was a fascinating thing because in that interim time, in those 20 years, the stuff that we, meaning the science community, not me, I'm a social scientist. I'm not a medical scientist, or I'm not a medical doctor, but the social science is there. But anyway, in the brain studies, it's shockingly wonderful how much has been learned about the brain and what we can do. So with that, I got into it, read everything I could on it, and got certified as what's called a havening practitioner. Now, please forgive me for diving into the technical part. What that really is depotentiated, permanently potentiated neural pathways in the amygdala, which is based in or found in the neural networks in the what we typically call the emotional brain or the limbic system. And so my apologies for that bit of technology there, but it's called Havening. That's the street name for it. So in 2022, January 2022, so a little over 2 years ago, I started yet a new clinical trial. This time I have not written the book ahead of time. I'm doing the clinical trial. And I'm just proud to tell you that we're having an amazing success rate with that. So that's something that started as a college research paper 44 years ago, has just followed me through the years. And the thing was, here, Ajay, is I knew back then that I had covered or uncovered the real root cause. Had no idea what to do about it. It's taken me 40 years to figure that out. But I knew I had the root cause, because diet and exercise and psychotherapy and all the things that we can think of that we all say this is the reason. Well, yeah, they lose the weight. They'll get that first target, but a year and a half later, 97 out of 100 have gained the weight back. That's worse than cocaine addiction. So clearly it had to be something beyond just losing the weight. And that kept me interested.
Right. At a time when weight loss itself is a big industry, this aspect of, you know, understanding the weight gain itself can help a lot of people, and not just focusing on weight loss, but understanding the reasons. But is it only about childhood, Jason? Is it only about the mind? For a common man, can you help us understand a bit more about, from a common person's perspective? A lot of people think, you know, go to the gym, do things. And at the same time, a lot of people who are very, you can say, almost obese in childhood, later on turned out to be even film stars or great bodybuilders and set a great example and do a lot of things. Then they talk about these things, how they have lost their weight. Help us understand that. Is it about the childhood, or is it about beyond that?
Well, the direct answer, yes, it is about the childhood. And let me be real clear. That's only for 99% of the people. There is a very, very small group of people out there. And there are women who are obese, and they're using their size as a buffer, a protection. And most of the time, these are women who had sexual assault or some other reason to be very shy from men. So that's a very, very small percentage. So other than that, yes, it's about childhood. Now, what happens is in childhood, this is set up, and it's what the average person would say, it's emotional or stress eating. Well, is not the same level as it is for in one person as it is for the next. So I call this the food monster, just as a kind of a colloquial way to understand it. So think about it this way. If we have this compulsion that's in the back of our brain, and actually it's in the mid part of the brain, and we are compulsive. So when we're stressed, we stress eat. But some people will only stress eat a little bit, where others will just, you know, eat everything. Well, that has to do with how strong that wiring is in the brain from childhood. So what we see is someone who has figured out a way for them to lose the weight and keep it off. Now, understand that typically that means they are what we call white knuckling. They're holding on. But it's also very, very comforting. It's just impressive, and it's motivational when we hear somebody has lost the weight because they went on this diet or that diet, or they went on this exercise program, or they did some particular thing and they've been able to keep the weight off for a long time. But that, because it's so inspiring, is perhaps just because it's rare. Now, at the beginning, we said there's a lot of folks. You said worldwide. Well, in America alone, where we have really good data, there's 130 million people who are obese, not just overweight, but obese. So if you occasionally run into 5 or 10 people who are able to keep it off, well, what's going on is they have a smaller compulsion, and then lifestyle and what have you allowed that to build up, and they got pretty big, but they aren't driven to the level most of the other people are. So bottom line, to answer your question, it's not what you eat. In my original research, I had people, multiple different types of vegetarians. They were all obese. I had people who were junk food junkies. They were all obese, people who ate a standard American diet. And even today, you'll find people who are on the keto or whatever types of diets, and they're still obese. So it's not the diet, it's not the exercise. You can go out right now. You and I are sitting here, we're talking, and we're burning whatever the number of calories we are while we sit here, right? So, but if we got up out of our chairs and went running for a mile, jog or run, and come back, and we burned about 100 extra calories above what we're burning just sitting here. Well, a single slice of bread is about 100 calories. Now, it's going to take me, and I'm in pretty good shape, it's going to take me 10, 15, maybe 20 minutes to run that mile. I can eat that one slice of bread in, you know, about the same number of seconds. So there's no way you can out-eat, or excuse me, out-exercise what you can eat. So all of these other things that we get into now, and I mentioned earlier about how out of 100 people who lose the weight, 97 gain the weight back. Well, what I didn't say was how they lost that weight. It's from your social programs like Weight Watchers, where everybody's kind of rah-rah and helping you, or your psychotherapy, or hypnosis, or any of the things where it's talk therapy. The only one thing that has a better track record is actually bariatric surgery. Now, that still is not very successful. If you look at your own fist and say, okay, roughly each person's fist is about the size of their own stomach. You go through bariatric surgery, well, it depends on what it is, but you know, of course they cut you open, it's very invasive, and they change your stomach from the size of your fist to about the size of your thumb. Now, what's amazing about that is that after 5 years, over half the people who've had bariatric surgery and this thumb-sized stomach is all they have, they still manage to push enough food through that that they've gained all or more of the weight back. So over half who have surgery weigh more than they did in 5 years than they did when they had the surgery. So that speaks back to this deep issue in the brain. And one thing, I keep saying the brain, and it's real easy to think this is a mental illness. It is not. It's a fully functioning, healthy brain that is built up. So we are created with the way our brain actually works, and we develop patterns in our childhood that we will be basically compulsive about things that we were given as positive reinforcement throughout childhood. Unfortunately, because we now live in an industrialized society where food is very, very prevalent, and the cultures of the world tend to give us a lot of positive feedback while we're eating, that becomes the compulsion. So when we're stressed as an adult, that part of the brain is called the amygdala. Think of it as the sentry who's the guard, the guard out at the gate. And when anything comes in, now it can be any of the five senses, you know, sight, sound, whatever. We see the saber-toothed tiger or the bad guy coming at us, the amygdala automatically sends in a signal, danger, you're in trouble, go to safety. And that's why when you walk around the corner, you see a rope or a hose on the ground, you jump back. Well, it's the amygdala saying, snake. And a little bit later, your brain goes, oh, that's just a piece of hose. Well, the amygdala tells you what to do. It only recognizes danger and safety. It does not have language. That's real, real important to know. It doesn't have language. And so it doesn't matter if you're Chinese or English. It won't matter. So all of the talk therapies, all of the social therapies, all of those things will help you lose the weight, but they won't keep it off because they don't de-pattern that patterning. So yes, your question is really quite accurate, but it really is ultimately what's created in those patterns during childhood. Ultimately, that really is. And if you, by the way, we have the technology, we have the knowledge to de-pattern that. And if you think of it like as a highway in your brain, and we deconstruct that highway so that the pathways in the brain are what we call naive. So those, you don't take anything out, you just change the structure of that highway.
Right, right, Jason. So for those people who are now grown up, they cannot go back to their childhood and do something about it in terms of weight gain. So what can they do right now? And for people who are, say, parents or even children themselves, if they listen to this in one way or the other, or their parents tell them, what is it that they can do for themselves at this point in time. So both the people, in terms of children as well as grown-ups who cannot go back in time, but still there might be some way to rectify it.
You asked two really great questions in there. So I'm going to address the children first. The way we raise our children, now I'm older, I'm in my 70s. So back when I was a little boy, we always sat at the table and we had to have manners. You know, get your elbows off the table, close your mouth when you're chewing. There's just a whole set of manners. Also in my household, my mother always wanted to know what happened at school today. So I had to respond. There were things that she was expecting of me. So that's a little bit of childhood stress, and that's a healthy thing. So while I was eating, it wasn't the stress-free best time of the day. Now, if it's in your family, it's very much so in some cultures that children are the apple of the eye, so to speak. And so when they come to dinner, everybody's joyful, everybody's happy. That kind of an environment is what sets up this pattern. So if you've got kids, especially that they're starting to get a little chubby on you, start giving them assignments at the table. Tell them, hey, we're going to talk about this. I want to know what you learned in school. Not just a good day, but what you learned. And tell me about what's going on, or why did you make that decision? So they're a little bit of anxiety. Not tough. You're not talking about being a difficult parent. Just give them something other than pure joy. And don't tell your children to clean their plate. Don't tell them that if they have to clean their plate to get the dessert. Don't make food a reward. A little child skins their knee, don't grab them up and put a lollipop in their mouth or an ice cream. They scratch their knee, you grab them up, hold them, love them, rub the knee, blow it, kiss it. Do all the things that a loving parent would do, but don't give them food, because the food says, oh, I'm good when I get food. So that's the children thing and kind of avoiding it. Now let's talk about the adults. That pattern is there and it's permanent. It's what we call a permanently potentiated neural pathway. Well, the only thing that will change that is if you bring up that either memory or you bring up the thought, such as when I was a little boy, we were on our way to grandma's house and oh, I was so excited and I loved it. And when we had dinner there, we're all holding hands. Grandpa is saying grace, etc. And I'm feeling absolutely safe and loved and all that. Well, you bring up that, and at the same time, you do what's called havening touch. Havening touch is a fairly new therapy. It's just was made public in 2013. But what happens is while you're doing the havening touch, you create delta wave in the brain. Now, that might sound strange to some people, but AJ, right now what we're doing is you and I are talking, we're listening to each other, and we're probably in beta. You have multiple wavelengths. If we get really excited or threatened and panic, that's theta. Calm down a little bit to normal thinking, we're in beta. If you start meditating and get really calm, you go into alpha. Just as you go to sleep, you go into theta. And then when you're in deep, deep sleep, you go into delta. So it's a normal brainwave. But if you do the stimulation with havening, like a safe haven, then what happens is that creates delta. Now, what the real brain scientists know is that when you have if you have a pathway or a memory or a thought that is activated, so you're thinking about that wonderful Christmas dinner and that memory and the joy and all the goodness is now activated, and you do the havening where you have the delta wave in the brain, that changes the chemical structure that's in that pathway. So what's happening is you gradually start deconstructing that highway. So now if you think of a highway out on the road out somewhere, and somebody comes along and takes all the pavement and all the bridges and all that away, but they don't take the earth away, the dirt is still there and you can still go up and down it. That's kind of an analogy for what happens to us. So there is absolutely a way to deconstruct that permanent pathway, but you have to do the delta. There are two therapies that we know of that do this. One is called EMDR, that's eye movement desensitization and repatterning. And you create the delta wave by moving the eyes laterally, left and right, while you hold the head still. eyes go back and forth. And that creates delta wave. And that's been replicated in the labs quite well. We know that. The other is the havening touch. You can do them in combination. Most people don't. I don't in my work. And the havening touch is where you rub with your own hands. You rub the skin on your forehead and on the cheek planes above the cheekbones, down the side of the arm, and on the palm of your hand. Now, that seems really strange to a lot of people, but let's take a look at it for just a second. The skin on your hand is very different on the palm than it is on the back of the hand. Now, just anybody looks at their own hand, you can see the difference. And this skin, one of the things that's easy to see is that it has no hair follicles, but what we cannot see is inside the skin, there are nerve endings that are special. It's called gametic skin. And as you're rubbing this skin, that, for whatever reason, creates delta wave in the brain. Now, as I rub my forehead, it does the same thing. And as I'm rubbing my forehead, it's creating about 90 times, not 90%, but 90 times more delta wave in the brain as I'm doing this than what we normally have. Now, there's always a little bit of delta present in the brain. But as I do this, this creates that hugely. So now if I could sit here and do this for the next 20 minutes, I've got an enormous amount of delta. But if I don't bring that memory up or that patterning thinking of how wonderful it was to be at grandma's or how I had this great time, every time we had dinner, it was a family fun. It was a free for all. It was joyful. If I don't bring that feeling up, then all the delta wave means nothing. Or if I bring the feeling up, but don't bring the delta wave, again, it means nothing. But you have to put those two together, and now you can literally depotentiate what was a permanently fixed pattern in the brain. Once that's done, now we are in a situation where we no longer have stress eating. The person gets stressed, and let's take a look at what that means for most of us. Okay, we have, most of us know somebody who, when they're stressed, they can't eat. They lose their appetite. They go through something bad, like a long divorce, and they lose their appetite. They lose, you know, 20 kilos, 40 pounds for the Americans. And or we know the other people who, when stressed, it doesn't change their weight at all. But then there's a whole bunch of us that, when stressed, you know, we just keep eating and eating and eating. No matter how full we are, we keep eating. We clean our plate. We do that. Well, when we do this process with the havening and bringing this up, and it doesn't happen in one session. It takes a while to get this done. But once it's done, there's no more stress eating. It's gone. It's cured. It's healed. It's resolved. So that's what we do. And yes, right now, but as I said earlier, I'm just wrapping up 2 years of this research. And at this point, I've got 85% success of people who have been able to resolve that issue. They get stressed. They don't eat. They eat till they're full, and it doesn't matter what's on the plate. Throw it away, give it to the dog, whatever they do. And they just say, I'm not interested anymore. I don't care. And they're a good percentage, over 50% of those people are spontaneously losing the weight. Now, that's unheard of. To just without any effort, without any work, just the weight starts falling off.
Wonderful. There is so much to learn about all these things from you, Jason. And I'm sure a lot of people would want to understand more about you, about your research, about what you have written. So what is the best way for them to connect with you, Jason?
Right now, as we're recording this, it's been a few days out, but within just a couple of days, my new website will be up, and it's nevergaintheweightback.com is the website. And on that website, there'll be a place where they can get a free download of the first five chapters of the book. The book's not even out yet, but I want to give this out to people so they can get an understanding of all these things we've talked about. And they can learn truly how being overweight has never been their fault. That's the one takeaway, if I could give anybody. It's not your fault. We beat ourselves up horrifically over it. And I know this for a fact because I personally have been obese. But now that it's healed, I don't worry about it. I just don't worry about my weight. I never think about it. So yeah, nevergaintheweightback.com, and look on there. There'll be a place where you can get your free download of the first chapters of the coming book.
Wonderful. Wonderful. With this, it's a wrap on this very special edition of the KJ Masterclass Live. Thank you so much indeed for joining us.
Thank you, Ajay. Appreciate your letting me talk.